Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to today's Big Squid Podcast. My name is Justin Hamilton, and you're tuning in to part two of Big Squid Live. Hello, and thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. A reminder that this is part two of our live extravaganza that was originally filmed in Adelaide, South Australia at the Rhino Room. A big thank you to Craig, Mick, and all of the team at the Rhino Room for making the night run nice and smooth. You need things to run smoothly behind the scenes so you can make all the stuff on the stage work. So thank you very much for all your time and effort, guys. Look, you don't have to listen to part one first. You could listen to this part first. It doesn't matter. But if you want to do it in order, that episode is already up and it has Rove, Ben Elwood, author Garth Jones, musician Georgia Mooney, and Adam Spencer as my guests. Today's episode has Tom Gleason, the fabulous Adam Richard, Limo, Mickey D, and a big music ending. Yes. As I said in the last podcast, if you're an old school fan of my work from the 90s, you might even recognize who the guest is and possibly even the song. Yes. I dug right back into my history to bring this one out, and it's fun. Anyway, if you're wondering how this came to be, I recently turned 50. You might not be across that. And anyway, I had a birthday celebration on the 17th in Adelaide. It's very funny, isn't it? 50. Like, you're probably thinking, yeah, man, you look 50. But to be honest, I'm not necessarily certain I feel it. But anyway, we had a party in Adelaide on the 17th, and I looked at who was coming over, and I just kind of threw it out there. Do you want to do a live show? And that's how we ended up with this lineup of people all together on a random Friday night in Adelaide that wasn't the Fringe. And just so you know, I didn't want to make a fuss about my birthday. Like, the party was my birthday and the show was the show, and I didn't want anyone to really mention my birthday. But for people who were there on the night, look, we finished the show and then Adam Spencer went out and gave an impromptu speech, and I dropped a last line that might be the funniest thing that I've said all year, but you know what? Sometimes the best jokes of the night stay in the room, and we were not recording at that point. So maybe, you know, if you see me after a gig or something and you ask me, I'll gladly tell you what was said. But anyway, comedy. There is also a mild glitch in this episode, and when I say a mild glitch, I had to edit a certain person's comment once again in the room, the fabulous Adam Richards said something and it was funny, but I thought, you know what? I don't need the pain that might come from publishing this. So I took it out. So there will be a little moment where you think, oh, what just happened? And then there'll be jokes off the back of it. And once again, if you see me in the street, if you come to my shows and you ask me afterwards, I will gladly tell you what he said. But I could not endorse it by publishing it on the podcast. God damn it, Adam Richard. You make my life so hard sometimes. Don't get me wrong, he's one of my closest friends. But God damn it, I had to remember it was there. I had to yell out to Craig Egan, hey, remind me that he just said that. You'll hear all of that in the podcast. I left all of that part in. But I really had to take it out. And then when I was putting this together, because I do all the, you know, producing and the editing, I had to make sure, oh, yep, that's out. But anyway, live. It's just nothing like it, really, okay? After the podcast, I'll give you details on when and where you can see me live next. But for now, let's kick off with part two of Big Squid Live in Adelaide. All right, we're going to bring out our next two guests. They're both from Adelaide. They're two of my oldest friends. Please welcome to the stage, Lemo and Mickey D. Fucking the tree. The tree. Can you believe it?
Yeah, mate.
Like, look at you. Like, I've known you for so long and you just really fucking went for it with the hair, didn't you?
Why
like,
not?
You on know, the top and on the face.
Yep.
And somehow he's the one who looks more like a pedophile.
We actually...
Who knew?
We actually, we swapped hair earlier.
Oh, did you?
This was Mickey's mohawk earlier
right,
tonight.
Yeah.
And that was my moustache.
Right. It looks great. Great to be able to change that up.
Mickey's hair looks like you could just rip it off.
Yeah.
Be like the ultimate closer from a stripper.
Yeah.
Merkins for everyone.
Can you remember young Mickey D when we were at the old Bolts Cafe?
Yes.
And the Chi coming in at... How old were you when you first started stand-up?
Oh, about 17 and a half.
Yeah, right. Oh, shit, I was... Can you say 18? Because I was serving you drinks.
You know...
But it wasn't a full beer.
No.
Because you topped it up with Cointreau.
Yes.
I didn't even know what Cointreau was. I just thought, carton draft tastes like citrus.
Yeah. I liked you. That's how you showed affection to someone.
There you go.
Put a shot of Cointreau in
and
their beer.
And don't drive for a week. It's like, I don't have a license.
But you know he was young because he still keeps halves in his age.
Right.
17 and a half.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is like...
I dug out that 6 months. That was the worst 6 months of my life.
Mickey, when we were first at Rhino Room, right, we loved Mickey and he was fucking hilarious straight away. And Mickey came down each week and used to love the shows. And I had a bit of material about smoking pot, right?
Yeah.
And people laughing because I'm just not a... Like, that was a really brief period in my life.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
From more of a heroin guy now.
Yeah. Like. And hence the long sleeves.
Yeah, yeah. And just fucking. And I did this bit where I pretended. My joke was, I used to say, you can tell when you're really stoned when you get to the second half of a sentence and you've already forgotten the first half of the sentence, right? And I did this thing where I'd improvise and I'd talk about taps, right? What's going on with taps? Anyway, it was fucking hilarious. I went through the whole joke, right? And. Anyway, the next week, Mickey turns up, right, and he goes, oh, I got your present. I said, what's that? And he fucking hands me a tap, right? But it's not a tap that's been bought at Bunnings. It's a tap that he's gone to his neighbour's front yard with a hacksaw and sawn off the tap, and he's handed me his neighbour's tap.
He's still unhappy. I should have really shut the mains off too. That was
the mistake.
It was.
Yeah.
You never had to water those bulbs again though.
No.
That garden's still blooming.
Yeah. If he wants it back, I've still got the tap.
Have you?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time that you saw Lemo? Was it at Bolt or was it on TV?
Yeah, I finished high school. And Thank you. No,
all right, don't blow him up. He's fine, mate. Fucking hell. All right. We all nearly finished high school,
It was ages ago. I've done other stuff since. But the formal lessons finished and we're meant to be studying, but instead I went to see my first ever stand-up comedy set, and Limo's just come back from gigging in London and you're on fire, and I was losing my mind, and I was, you know, I was there with my two high school mates, Alex and Roman. I'm gone, this life stuff's fucking awesome. And then Limo's gone, what's that, mate? I've gone, oh, fuck, he can hear me. I was like, and I'm going to get him a tap.
Later that night. Man, that is hilarious. The were you into comedy as a kid, or what was the thing that really kind of kick-started this?
I think the first time I ever saw a stand-up comedy set, it was I was on a cruise ship with my family holiday. I was about eight.
Right, yeah.
And I saw some dude enter the talent contest with new stuff, and he was just destroying. And I'm like, wow, that's the first time. I was about eight, but I grew up in a pub.
Yeah.
So I'd seen random shit from way too early, and the pub was on an army base. So,
wow.
Yeah, one Thursday night, I hear this from my room, and I walk downstairs, and I hear this, and I'm like, oh, fuck it, it's Thursday. And I walk downstairs, and I see a bloke with a dart hanging out of his arm. And he's chasing after a guy who threw it at him. And it's like...
Right.
I'm like, yeah.
And that's how you met Chris Franklin.
So, totally. My mum and dad were always downstairs running the business. And, you know, I lived upstairs. So, the VHS. It was always across the road to the video hire place. And, you know, the Police Academy 1 week.
Police Academy 2 the next week.
You know, you've got to space it out. And that'd get you through winter, you know.
What's your pick of the franchise, the Police Academy
look,
franchise?
It had to be Citizens on Patrol.
Yeah.
You know, Bones Brigade are in there. Yeah. You know, it's the first time you really see some character development in Zed.
Yeah.
You know, G made a machine. You know,
it's the Godfather
stuff.
2 of the Police Academy franchise.
Yeah. No, I get that.
Mission to Moscow for you? Where does that sit?
It kind of lost me there. When Mahoney left, you know, Steve... Nah, that was peak Steve Guttenberg. Now, and seriously, and this is before, you know, having a physique in a comedy film was essential. And Guttenberg really brought it early on there. And if any true Police Academy fans will recognise Police Academy 1, he's the leading lady in the film was Kim Cattrall. Oh, I'm so lonely. And look, you remember these things. And the line that he said, and you look back, it hasn't aged overly well.
I need to tell you something here and now. It didn't age well at the time either.
I thought that was real life. You know, I was like eight going, I'm going to join the police. Because you can just randomly say, hey, show us your thighs. Right. What a weird thing to say in a film back then.
Well, it was ironic as well, because the first time I saw Steve Guttenberg, and you're the right age for this, when the Village People's Can't Stop the Music came out. And I, at the time, you remember, I didn't know anything about that fucking banana split situation I was telling about earlier. And I went and saw that movie and I thought, mate, that construction worker gets all the ladies. And, but Steve Guttenberg is in it, and in the movie he's wearing a crop top and denim shorts on roller skates, and he's rolling through the city, and it's listen to the sounds of the city, listen to the sounds of my life. And it's that's where I first saw Guttenberg with the thighs, and then he ends up being Mahoney, then he's in Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, like one Guttenberg of his better turns.
That explains why the first time I ever saw you on stage, you're in those tight denim shorts and the cut-off shirt with the roller skates.
I was the Steve Guttenberg Down Under experience. I was a Steve Guttenberg cover band and did remarkably well, actually. Yeah. But the so what was it? Was it just comedies, or you know, you've got your hands on the VHS? Are you watching horror movies? What are you getting
bit
into?
Of whatever was coming through. I remember one of the turning points was Michael Keaton in Beetlejuice. I reckon it was 89 or 90.
Yeah.
Mm. When that came out, oh man, I was straight downstairs in the front bar just acting out Beetlejuice. You know, I'm like a 9-year-old kick over the bar stool goes, nice fucking model. You know. That, because it was awesome. Because back then, you know, the late 80s, 90s, that, you know, memes were quotes from films people
right.
would recognise. You know?
Yeah, and you said the memes.
You just straight out loud, you know, like, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yep.
You know? Jaws.
Did
right?
that kill in the bar?
No, people were going, what's wrong with this kid?
We're in a bar. Like, where's
on.
The boat?
Where's the boat?
Hey, he's like, is he quoting Jaws? I'm like, yeah.
Do you, have you showed your favourite movies to your kids now?
Yeah, look, Porky's 2 is... Look,
again,
it's a hard watch for a five-year-old.
The pick of the franchise.
It yeah. is. It is. Yeah. It's before it was repetitive. But
yeah. It's know. The Top Gun Maverick of the Porky series. Yeah.
Lost their way with Porky's 3.
Oh, come yeah. into itself, mate. You know, Revenge of the Nerds was another one. That yeah. was a classic, you know. And then yeah. Revenge of the Nerds 2. It's often hard to back up, you know.
Yeah.
Does any, you know, does anyone remember, you know, what came after Oasis's first album? No.
Well, their second album.
Well, yeah, but...
Oh, is this some kind of fucking mathematical joke again? I just dealt with Adam Spencer.
I mean, I don't mean to get weird on you, Mickey, but definitely Maybe was the first album and What's the Story, Morning Glory was the second album, which was the big one.
Really? I have to rethink
But no one
everything.
Remembers the third album.
What was that?
I have fucking no idea.
Good point.
I got very drunk with Noel Gallagher once. He was a Did fucking you? Delight. He was really funny. We I ended up in this situation where we just got hammered and
hang on.
I was
hang
just
on.
Being hammo where? And he said, who are you, cool guy? And I went, hammo.
You can't start the story at we were getting hammered. Where the fuck were you?
So
and
I was,
how were you, you know, with all due fucking respect, how were you hanging out with Noel Gallagher?
It's a yeah. good fit. Right.
Yeah.
No, it's a good fit, but I want to know how it happened and how the fuck I missed out.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It's
now
about
we
me.
Get it. Yes, yes. Well, so he'd I was mates with someone from Neighbours, and he was a Neighbours fan, and invited them to the show. And
who was the Neighbours person?
Madeline West, and right. Madeline West invited Terry Siarkis and me, and we went along and we hung out. And he walked out into the back room, and Madeline said, oh, "These are my friends," blah blah blah. And he just, without missing a beat, he looked at me and went, "Who's your favourite artist?" And I did not fucking waver. I went, "David Bowie," and he went, "Nice." And then we were, I mean, it was like the best thing I could have said at that precise moment.
Oh,
then
man.
He just said, right, we're getting hammered. I've always wanted to buy some comedians some drinks. So then he's buying us drinks and hanging out. And he was telling these stories. He was really actually quite self-effacing. We were trying to encourage him to go to Fitzroy Karaoke to sing Blur's Song 2.
Nice
and
touch.
Terry and I were really onto him. Like, come on, let's do it. It'll be great. And he said, I'm not going to do it for two reasons. Oh, what's that? The first reason is I'll do it fucking better. We're like, no, Gallagher! And he said, the second the paparazzi will get me. And I said, the paparazzi won't get you. We'll be in fucking Fitzroy. He said, you don't understand my life. He said, I was at a Bucks party that I didn't really want to go to. I'm at this Bucks party and everyone's watching the strippers and I was just at the bar minding my own business and then there was a little person there and this little guy was talking about how strong he was and they were having a nice conversation and the little person said, I'm like much stronger than you. And Noel said, how strong are you? He said, I could carry you on my shoulders up these stairs. And Noel's like, no, you couldn't. He said, yes, I could. He said, he's 100 pounds. If you can do it, you can have this 100 pounds. So he gets on this little person's shoulders and he goes up the stairs. But at the second to top step, he trips and they fall out the doors. And then the paparazzi are taking photos. And then suddenly the next day, all through the rags, it's like Oasis singer comes out on dwarf's shoulders. So... it was just a night like that.
Pretty specific headline,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
they've really captured that context.
You wouldn't have predicted that one. Did you see the Liam Gallagher story today?
No.
Liam Gallagher, someone was asking him about crazy things to do as a rock star, and he admitted that once he ordered up to his room from room service a trampoline.
Right.
All right. I thought, what a fucking... fuck, it'd be great to be a rock and roll star.
Right.
Just, or like, I don't know, like a trampoline indoor, there's inherent issues with an indoor trampoline, but I just to be able to do that.
Mate.
You know, fucking Billy Idol once, right, in Bangkok, it's a true story, right, was in his hotel room for like 2 weeks, racked up a bill of $250,000, and they wanted to kick him out. He wouldn't leave. They had to get the Thai army to fucking remove him from the hotel room.
Right.
And it just made me go, I want to fucking be Billy Idol.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Instead, you have toured Iraq wearing henna tattoos shared a room with who?
I did, yeah. So I was in. So how did this start? I was in Thailand with my girlfriend at the time, and we were on the beach, and someone was coming down the beach doing henna tattoos. I don't have any tattoos, and she said, "Why don't you get a henna tattoo? See how it looks." And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's a great idea." Right. I'm so agreeable. And so I get this henna tattoo around here that's in Thai writing. And after this woman does it, I say, what does it say? And she said, it says, I love Thailand, right? So I've got this henna tattoo. They last for about a week, 10 days, right? 2 days, the next day we fly back to Australia. The day after that, I fly to Iraq to do shows for the troops. My roommate in Iraq for 2 weeks is Angry Anderson, right? Who is tattooed from fucking neck to wrist to ankle with fucking beasts and warlocks and fucking dragons and shit. I've got one tattoo. It's henna and it says, I love Thailand. Right? My fucking credibility was out the door. Oh, that's so, yeah. Wasn't exactly the fucking hard man greeting I wanted with Angry Anderson.
But
we bonded, Angry and I, on that trip. We got on like a fucking house on fire.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's weird seeing... Man, seeing Angry Anderson, right? Like, so we were sharing rooms and we were staying... It's such a weird thing, right? We're staying in one of Saddam Hussein's old palaces, right? In Baghdad, okay? And we're sharing a room, me and Angry Anderson.
Yeah.
We've got a little fucking ensuite off to the side, right?
Yeah.
And then I'm laying in bed and he's like getting out of the shower. And I just watch him walk out of the ensuite just with silk boxer shorts, right? And all these fucking tattoos. And I'm just looking at him thinking, like, what the fuck is going on with this world? I'm in Saddam Hussein's fucking palace.
Yeah.
With Angry Anderson. And he's in silk boxers and I'm fucking... And I've got a boner. Like,
yeah,
why?
Yeah, it's awkward.
Why are all these things happening?
Yeah.
That must have been the commemorative slippers.
Yeah.
There.
You know, the only thing that would have made it better is if you'd found one of Saddam's old VHS tapes and you put it in and there's him singing karaoke and singing Bound for Glory. Like, that's...
See, you know, one thing he hated on that trip, right? And he was amazing, Angry, performing for the troops. But we know him in Australia from Rose Tattoo, right? And
yeah.
Bound for Glory and all these fucking great heavy rock songs.
Sure.
In England, right, you know what
Let
he's...
Let him in. Let him in your heart.
I am.
He will fit.
No, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
In England, right, he's fit. You notice I'm fucking padding off all the sledges from
yeah.
that. In, you know what he's famous for in England?
Nah.
Singing Suddenly when Jason and Kylie got married on Neighbours.
Yes.
Right? So here he is, who's sung all these fucking great hard rock hits. Every British troop that saw him is like, oh my God, I love Suddenly on Neighbours. And he's like, oh, fuck off.
You've been a music fan for quite a while, and it started off at a pretty young age, right?
Yeah, it was Sesame Street.
One.
Started for me.
Two.
Now, my...
My name is Fred. My name is Fred. And when I go...
But the one I want to talk about tonight...
Yeah.
For me...
Yes.
Right. Elvis Presley, the fucking king, right? So it's not like fresh news to love Elvis Presley, right?
Right.
But the 68 comeback special is the one. That is one of the fucking... Like, if an alien landed and said, what's cool? What's fucking cool? No one's ever been cooler than Elvis Presley on the 68 comeback special. Leather, head to toe.
Yeah.
And that motherfucker just fucking brings it. Like, if you don't get a tingle in your pants, male or female, watching Elvis Presley at that comeback special, then you're not living. He is... And what I extra love about that, he's been off for 7 years making movies.
Right.
This is his comeback.
Yeah.
And it was kind of became a joke. Everyone's like, now we've got the Beatles and the Beach Boys and the Rolling Stones now. Elvis is like a fucking old man.
Yeah.
And he's a joke. You know how old he was at the comeback special?
No.
He's fucking 33.
Oh, jeez.
Is that old?
Right? And he'd been written off as a boring old man, right? And he was 33. He had been making films for 7 years and he came back and... The last movie he made before his... He made some good films, right? Made 32 films. And he
Wait
made
a
some,
minute. Like, I've already
he
put
made
up
some
with
fucking
this
good films.
Shit.
Fuck off.
Like, what?
He made some good films.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
It was Police Academy 2.
Yeah.
Come on. He was... Yeah. He he helped Lieutenant Hawksland at a drive. Yeah. He was there.
But the last movie, right? And I'm not even making this up. The last movie he made before the comeback special... was a movie called Stay Away Joe, right?
What was it about?
Where he played a... yeah. he played a Navajo Indian.
Oh, yep.
Right? So this is problematic as shit, right?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right.
He played a Navajo Indian called Joe Little Cloud.
Yep.
Right. And he had to breed these cattle to save his Navajo, fucking Elvis Navajo. Yep. Like, what the fuck, right? And he had to, and he had this this bull that he had to breed. And the bull, and this is not, this is true. I'm not making up. The bull turns out to be gay.
Right.
In the film, right?
So a
gay
bull. So he
can't breed. So right. To raise money to save, they have to do bull riding. Everyone has to come pay money to bull ride. And he bull, anyway, it's a fucking disaster. It's his worst film by a mile. And his career's in the toilet. And then he comes to do the comeback special. No one wants it. NBC says, fuck it, we'll take a risk on it. Colonel Parker wants him to do Christmas songs because it's a Christmas special. He says, I'm not singing fucking Christmas songs. I'm going to be fucking Elvis Presley. Right? And he dresses himself in leather from fucking head to toe. And he sings his classics. And he sings the fucking gospel songs that he wants to sing. And he delivers an hour of the most beautiful fucking television you've ever seen. It was the highest rating show of the year. And it just fucking launched Elvis back. And it reminded everyone... Fuck your bands, fuck all your bullshit, fuck me being old. I'm the coolest cunt on the planet and you can all get fucked.
Right.
And it was amazing.
Right.
And if you haven't seen it, what have you been doing with your life? Go and watch the comeback special, but put it into context first and remember that everyone had written him off. They all said he was an old man. They all said he was shit, but he came back and he dominated that thing and he was 100% himself. He spent 7 years being other people, trying to be famous, trying to please other people.
Being
and he
Navajo.
Came back
yeah.
and he was himself
yep.
and yeah. he was the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, but how did the film end? yeah. You know?
I'll tell you how the film ended, yeah. right? The yeah. film ended, no one could ride the bull and then he rode the bull at the end and he fucking rode good.
Oh,
and he fucking
classic Elvis.
Classic Elvis.
yeah. yeah
man. Fucking Joe Little Cloud saved the tribe.
Yeah. That's. Did you go and see the movie?
Sorry?
Did you go and see the movie? The Baz Luhrmann movie?
The Baz Luhrmann? Yes, yes. I did. Yes.
Were you? Did you go in being a little bit, if this guy doesn't get it fucking right, there's going to be
nah,
a riot?
No, nah, no. Nah. I went in going, this is a Baz Luhrmann film, so yep. it's going to be a Baz Luhrmann film. And it was a fucking Baz Luhrmann film.
Yeah.
And it was great.
But the Elvis 68 comeback special was still quite ahead of its time and artsy, you know, for want of a better description. Because yep. it was like... there's a couple of sets, but then on the Blu-ray version, and I know it's Blu-ray because I accidentally bumped my Blu-ray player and knocked Elvis 68 comeback special onto 1.5 speed, and it is the best thing I've ever seen. You know, Elvis, he's not entirely Alvin from the Chipmunks, but he's leaning in there, you know. I had to rewind it a bit because I didn't know, what is he? Mushikup? What is he? Oh, he's all shook up. It was a little bit...
Money,
oh.
Show, go, don't you? Step by Blue Sweat 2. Don't you think but step by Blue Sweat 2.
Really jerky like that, you
yeah.
know.
So he's talking about it being an hour-long special and you're going, no, mate, it's 23 minutes.
You know, yeah.
What are you talking about?
You know, I had places to be. But during the 68 comeback special, all of a sudden it cuts to this black dude doing an interpretive dance. Tell me you've seen the full version as well, because this actually is in the middle of the show. It just cuts to, okay, we're going to do some interpretive dance now while they reset the stage.
And that was the inspiration for Porky's 3.
Fuck, it all comes together. It really does.
Yeah, it feels like that. All right, round of applause for Lemo, Mickey D.
Yay! Thanks.
All right, we are going to bring out our final guest this evening before we have to do the corporate sellout, so I'm still really sorry about that. Please welcome to the stage the fabulous Adam Richard and the hard as shit Tom Gleason.
Yes!
What is this mess?
Yeah, well, Limo's been here.
Oh, wow. Limo did.
So thanks for still being here. Like, this show started last Thursday, and yes. We're still going. But we knew this was going to happen. It's good to have you both here. You actually work on Hard Quiz.
I do. This is my boss.
Yes. Yeah. What's he like as a boss?
He's the best person who ever lived. So amazing. No, should I tell this story or not?
You can if you want to.
At work...
the boss is drinking even though the employee doesn't. I deny those allegations. I'm a cunt in person.
Yeah. The worst, the absolute worst. Can someone remind me to edit this? You know, this bit will be in it as well. The bit where I get you to remind me.
He was referring to the Hills hoist.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
The man who invented the Hills hoist. Yes. Very, like a tyrant. Horrible,
yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah, fuck that.
Very Hills difficult hoist. When he was in the media.
I know, I said that in his hometown. It'll get back, won't it?
Yeah, it will get back. Don't you worry about that. They're ready to go. What's it like having Adam as someone underneath you, metaphorically?
Matron! Oh, look at
that. Thank you.
There
you
go.
Oh, hang on.
These fucking Logie winners, they stick together, don't they?
Oh, wow. Thank you very much. That's such a thrill to receive this from a Gold Logie winner who won it sincerely as opposed to me.
I mean, look, you did point out on the night, Tom, that you had the highest rating show of anyone that was nominated.
They don't like that, do they?
No.
And by that, I mean facts.
and the truth, the popularity truth.
So, Tom, yeah, people forget that. And this is quite interesting. When I've talked to some people, they have no idea that you actually hit fame at a point that they have no idea about. To an extent where you were a pin-up in TV Week.
Yeah.
And then, like, I've talked to people who was, oh, fuck, I love Tom Gleason, I'm his biggest fan. I said, were you a fan of the Australian fast bowler? And they go, what? And then you say to them, you haven't seen it. And the first thing, if you Google it, the first one that comes up is when you take the cat out of the tree. And they are shocked. It's just this thing that was this big popular moment in time that they've somehow missed and then have found you now. Do you have that happen often? Do you have people coming up fucking going, wait a minute, or...
No, everyone's forgotten.
Yeah.
A long time ago that I was the Australian fast bowler. But in its prime, I remember being in Adelaide, and this is when I realised it might have connected as a concept. I was at the Austral, and I was out the back having a quiet beer before a stand-up show at the old Rhino Room.
Yep.
And I'd walked through... The only way to get from the back bar to the front bar was through this... there was a private function going on, and it was full of men in their early 20s, and they went, oh, it's the Australian fast bowler!
You're all going, how you going, mate? How's that? On your way back to the pavilion. And I couldn't get out of that room for an hour. I was being manhandled by people who were 10 years younger than me. It was extraordinary.
Where was the inspiration from that? Like, was that just throwing ideas around, or was that something that you'd played around with on stage? Or
I know. Well, when I started doing Skid House for Channel 10, and Rove was my boss,
yeah,
we did a pilot, and I watched the pilot back, and I wasn't really in it. I just didn't really. I was just not there, and I thought I've got to do something so that I retain my position in this show and get invited back to the series. So I thought I've got to do something desperate. And I like playing cricket, and I thought the idea of saying "how's that" in the wrong situation would be funny.
Yeah,
because that's all sketch shows are, doing the wrong thing in the wrong place.
Yeah.
Oh, don't say "how's that." Where? A funeral, you know. Oh, yeah. So I pictured I'm at a funeral. How's that? That's funny. Oh, it needs more. And I kept on imagining myself going "how's that" in, like, you know, like at a wedding. Oh shit! Or in front of the Pope, and I'm like, this is not working. And then I realised once I clicked onto the idea that what if I'm Dennis Lilly but I'm Superman?
Yeah.
That's when it all came together.
Yeah.
So instead of, look up in the air, it's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's Superman. It became, oh, look, it's the Australian fast bowler.
Yeah.
And then I'd turn up and bowl a cat out of a tree. Yeah. That's what Superman did when he first he got a cat out of a tree.
Yeah.
So that's what I based it on. And I thought it was very original until years later I was watching Paul Hogan's sketch show on VHS because I was reminiscing because I loved it as a kid, and while I'm watching it I'm like, this is not as good as I remember it. It's like Benny Hill, but instead of Benny Hill it's Paul Hogan.
Yeah.
And the jokes are even more obvious.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of it there's a sketch where they do the World Series cricket at war.
Oh.
And it's Paul Hogan dressed as Dennis Lilly. And I'm like, fuck, that's the Australian fast bowler.
Right.
I've been stealing Crocodile Dundee's shit. Yeah. He bowled a grenade. I'm like, I think I did that on Skid House. Yes. He called someone a poofter. I also did that. Yeah. In fact, that's a really funny clip that I want to put online, but I can't do it because I can't deal with younger people telling me that I can't say poofter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, but the Australian fast bowler's from the 70s.
Yeah.
And so to be authentic to that, I hate to break it to you, but this superhero's homophobic.
Yeah. It's not my fault.
Well, I don't want to assassinate any characters, but I've met Dennis Lilly and he's a bit old-fashioned.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Were you a fan of the Paul Hogan show?
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember that there was... I refused to go back to it because I loved it so much as a kid. But there was the...
It might wreck it.
Yes, I know.
I wrecked it.
It's a bit slower than you remember.
Right.
I wrecked it by going to... I got invited by Annie Peacock, who used to run the, you know, the Crown Casino publicity. And she was like... Oh, we're going to go and see Paul Hogan. Would you like to come? I'm like, sure. And he basically, it was like a live show where I don't know if he couldn't be asked writing his memoir, and I just started to say it out loud. And then just showed clips from the show.
Right.
And I was like, oh, there's a lot of bouncy boobs. That's not a punchline.
Right. Well, you know, the sketch that has stuck in my memory that I refuse to go back to because in my head it's still brilliant was when he did the Indiana Jones sketch, and he said, instead of getting the gold idol, it's a gold Logie, and then he gets attacked by a bear and it's Humphrey. And in my head, that's a fucking funny sketch. I refuse to go back to it because I reckon it'll just be a lot of, right. Young Hammo was easily entertained and I don't want to judge Young Hammo, so... Was there sketch comedy that you were into as a kid, or what were you into?
I loved the two Ronnies.
Yes.
Because they always seemed like they were saying something filthy, but
never
quite.
Right. And so you took that and took it one step further and actually said something filthy. Yeah.
You're like the two Ronnies if they stopped implying things.
Yeah. I know, it's Mrs. Slocum's cunt.
I remember once Justin and I were co-hosting The Shelf, and Will Anderson said we looked like the two Ronnies on a bender.
Oh, yeah. the less successful two Ronnies. Were you a fan of UK sitcoms or comedies?
Well, I used to love Doctor Who, so I watched whatever was on before it. Right. So, like, you know, Kenny Everett, The Goodies, like all of that shit. I loved it. I loved Kenny Everett because he always seemed like he was saying something really revolting that I wasn't supposed to get.
Yes. Yes, yeah, he.
Which I've kind of enjoyed. I always get booked for family TV shows. Like, I've done, like, you know, Celebrity Dog School and Celebrity Splash, and I thought, I'm just going to be someone's Kenny Everett one day.
Right.
Just saying filthy things, and it's like, I was like, yeah, I don't know if you can say that.
It's almost like that's why you stopped doing stand up, isn't it? So you could keep getting booked on those gigs.
Yeah, but people come see me do stand up, they go, oh, he actually just says that out loud.
Oh, my God. I remember as a kid, my friends had been over to the UK and they came back and they said, you have to watch this. And they put in a VHS tape and it was nothing I'd ever heard of before. It's nothing I'd ever seen. And this was my introduction to this series. But it was the University Challenge episode of The Young Ones.
Oh, wow.
And it's the one where Vivian sticks his head out the train and the head gets knocked off and the body comes looking for it. And he's like, it took your fucking time. And, you know, he's kicking their head. And as a kid, that was like, you know, your brains are dribbling out of your ears. And then you look back on it and it's not only, A, it's still funny. Like, it actually still holds up.
Yeah, doesn't he throw a grenade down at the other team?
Yeah, yeah. But the other team's like Stephen Fry, Hugh Laurie, Emma Thompson and Ben Elton just on a fucking sketch show. Like, what the hell is going on?
Do you know what's... So this was a topic on the show and so I read into that and, like, Alexi Sayle at the time cracked the shits that all of those people were on it.
Right.
Because he thought they were making this kind of left-wing, you know, really aggressive TV show, and all those guys were Cambridge footlights.
Right.
And he thought, oh, no, you've let the establishment in.
Right.
And whereas Ben Elton was like, no, I was always one of those assholes.
Right.
And then years later, Alexi Sayle and Ben Elton hadn't spoken and they finally made up and Alexi was taken to see Ben Elton's show that was on. Like, it was some... you know, musical. I think it was the We Will Rock You, the right. Queen musical. And he's like, oh, you know, I've written this, you should come. And he sat there and is like, it was the worst thing I've ever seen. And I felt like this was revenge for me not talking to him for the last 3 years, making me sit through this.
I'll get back at you. So what was it about Doctor Who that appealed?
It was terrifying. Like, this is a weird thing. Like, when you do stand-up, everyone... like, it's one of those things people go, oh, it must be the hardest job in the world. And it's like, well, yeah, technically, it's an anxiety-riddled thing because it's like, what if everyone hates it? And I remember once we went on a snow trip when I was doing radio, and Joe Stanley and I had tried to learn to ski and we both hated it. And we're like, why are we not enjoying this? Everyone else seems to love plummeting down a hill, you know, with taking their life in their hands and freaking themselves out and getting to the bottom and go, that was amazing. And I'm like, yeah, we do that every day.
Right.
That's our job. Like, being at, like, a crazy level of adrenaline is our job. And I think that was the thing with Doctor Who. Like, my upbringing was not great and I was constantly terrified of my dad. But watching Doctor Who was like, oh, I know this is going to be frightening.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing I can control. I can control when I'm having a terrible, terrible time. I can control when I'm going to be scared. And it's the same thing as stand-up. It's like, oh, I suffer from anxiety. I have panic attacks. But I know when I'm on stage, like, oh, I'm controlling this. I'm in charge of this potentially horrific situation.
Yeah.
When everyone may hate me for talking about rimming.
Don't forget I'm your boss and I can make you have a horrific panic attack right now.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Wow.
You don't know.
I've rehired you.
I was going to say, like, I got up at 6 o'clock this morning to work on Tom's show. So, things will go horribly wrong next week when we're filming. If I'm fired.
I did not get up at 6 o'clock to work on my show. That's why I'm the boss. Back to you, Adam.
Were you a Doctor Who fan as a kid?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. Yeah. I came in with John Pertwee, the James Bond Doctor Who.
Yes. Yeah.
Love John Pertwee. Even watched a bit of Wurzel Gummidge.
Oh, yeah.
just to check when it was going to get good. It didn't for me.
Yeah.
And Tom Baker was obviously, he's the Roger Moore, I feel. Of the, and then the guy from, what was the other, next guy after that? The
Peter Davison.
Yeah, I was not a fan of his.
Yeah.
Because I'd seen him on All Creatures guy. Great and Small, and I'm right. like, a vet can't be Doctor Who.
Right.
Get fucked.
Yeah.
He's got to go and care for animals. He can't travel through time.
Yeah.
And then who turned up after him? Was it... Who was it after that?
That's Colin Baker.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like,
with the big colourful coat.
Oh, it's just like... Tom Baker's brother, is it? He gave him curly hair and a scarf like we wouldn't notice. Oh, shit, it reminds me of Tom Baker. Get fucked, Colin Baker. And then they did the TV show with what's-me McGuigan. What's his name?
Paul McGann.
As you can see, I haven't visited it since I was a kid. You know why? Because I'm an adult and I watch adult shows now like Ozark and I don't reminisce about Doctor Who unless I'm doing a podcast and trying to impress nerds in the middle of the night. I don't normally do this. It's beneath me.
$33,000. Remember that, folks. So.
But yeah, I like... Yeah. Yeah, I did like Doctor Who.
Yeah.
When I was a kid. And then when it finished, I stopped thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because I grew up and matured.
Yeah.
And had a well-adjusted teenage years. Unlike
yeah, no, that hasn't happened for me yet.
Totally unrelatable on the stage at this moment. Yeah. The, you know, when you're creating stuff, there's, you know, you throw ideas around and there's some stick, everyone gets really excited. And sometimes there's ideas that you throw around and everyone says you're not allowed to do that. You don't really understand why. With the Australian Fast Bowler, was there anything that you weren't allowed to do?
Yeah, it was at the end of the series and it wasn't that long after September 11. I wanted to base one in an aeroplane.
Right. I can't see where this has gone wrong.
Yeah. Well, I always remembered that it was like... So it's Superman, so he's always solving a problem. So I thought, what's the most high-stakes situation I can think of? And I thought, well, it's in an aeroplane. So I pictured you're in an aeroplane and a terrorist of Middle Eastern appearance.
Oh, dear.
We don't know what country he's from. He's not white. Anyway, he grabs a knife and threatens a flight attendant. A knife, because it's PG. I thought a gun was a bit much or a Stanley knife.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's got a knife and it's like, and the flight attendant's, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Oh, who can save us? And then the flight attendant looks down the aisle and goes, oh, look, it's the Australian fast bowler. And the Australian fast bowler has a pile of tinnies because he's trying to break Booney's record. Yeah. So he big pile of tinnies, he knocks them all over, just pops his head out in the aisle, how you going, right? And then everyone starts clapping on the plane, he's running down the aisle, he bowls the ball, and then the ball hits the terrorist in the middle of the head, leaves a tiny red dot, changes him from Muslim to Hindu, he finds inner peace, relaxes... And everyone goes,
dear.
Thanks, Australian fast bowler. Anyway, the executive producer, Rove McManus, put a line through that.
Yeah.
Didn't know how to live on the edge.
All right, thank you very much to Tom Gleason and Anne Richard.
Thank you to Tom, Adam, Limo, Mickey D. I hope you enjoyed the live show. They were fun to record. And a big shout out to everyone in Adelaide as well. You were fantastic. You were such a good audience and you were a lot of fun to perform to. So thank you for coming out and supporting us. If you're in Sydney and would like to see my new solo show, Little Victories, at the Sydney Comedy Store on the 28th of October, head to comedy.com.au and you'll find details on how to buy tickets. If you're in Melbourne, you'll find the details for the show that is coming to the Comedy Republic on the 26th of November. It's my first show in Melbourne in such a long time, and hopefully some of you remember me. It'd be nice to see you. My listeners can save money by using the discount code podcast, so remember to apply that. My Patreon supporters can access an even better discount, so make sure you use the correct one, Patreon people. And if you are not a Patreon supporter and you'd like to get access to super duper discounts along with bonus podcasts, scripts and more, head to patreon.com/JustinHamilton_BigSquid and you will find a tier that suits you. I'll be back with more Big Squid next week. There'll be a chitter chatter to kick off your week with Adam Richard on the Monday. And then it will be a two-part Space Podyssey with just Rove and me. No Ben Elwood for this one, but Rove was in town and we discussed Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So if you haven't watched that in a while and you'd like to get ahead of the curve before the podcast comes out, you've got the whole weekend to rewatch that wonderful film. I hope you're well. I hope you're doing okay in what is a pretty challenging year. And I just need to let you know that I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to this podcast and to be in touch via the socials. Look after yourselves. Until then.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.